What's up, everybody? Welcome to the first podcast. This is Caleb, and we are Writing Right with the Raiders, and I'm accompanied with my host.
Kevin Allen here, Precinct Chair 19 for Lubbock, Texas Republican Party. I'm also on the state board of the Texas Federation of College Republicans and a recognized civil rights activist for patients and students here in Lubbock, Texas.
Thanks for that intro.
Always.
I'm also the vice president of the Texas Tech College Republicans, and we're starting this podcast to inform Red Raiders on news going on in the nation, locally, and statewide.
Yeah, you know, when you talk about Texas Tech here in West Texas, the first thing you think about is conservative principles, and Texas being a red state and the scarlet red in Texas Tech, you automatically think about Republican values. And so, you know, as a student, I've noticed there's a big disconnect between students knowing what's going on, being involved in politics, wanting to get involved, and there's even students that are afraid to get involved because they don't know what's going on, and there's a lot of misinformation that goes around the campus here at Texas Tech, and we're going to try to improve that and get rid of some of the static.
Yep, that is exactly what we're planning on doing, and that's what we're hoping for this podcast. One of the good things about this podcast is the fact that we get to talk about what's going on in our nation and get to inform Red Raiders on how to basically be open about politics.
Yeah, and I think, you know, there's a lot of stuff going on in the world right now, and you often hear normalize mental health, and right now I think we need to normalize politics, getting involved in politics, caring about politics. You know, you've got prominent Red Raiders like Jody Arrington, who's now Congressman Arrington, has an office here in Lubbock. Carl Tepper, who's our state rep. You've got Senator Charles Perry and current Speaker of the House, Dustin Burroughs. And when you go up and ask students, you know, who's your senator? Who's your Speaker of the House? Who's your state representative? Who's your congressman? They often don't know who these people are, when you, even if you call them by their first name. And so I think a little awareness, education, and normalizing, you know, politics here in West Texas, especially at Texas Tech, who's got a student government with government programs and internships where students get sent to Washington, D.C., you know, I think it's sad that they don't know who their hometown representatives and leaders are, and it's time to change that.
Yeah, I definitely agree. My baseball coach growing up, he's one of the state representatives back home for my area, and I actually get to say that I know one of my representatives because he taught me baseball.
Yeah, and that kind of makes it a little more personal, because you often hear, hey, they're fighting for your rights, and you see their commercials a lot of times online. Now you'll see commercials on Facebook when you're scrolling or something, and people don't realize who these people are. And if you go and read the comments, you know, depending who's commenting, students tend to just auto-believe what they read, and there's a lot of negative comments on social media, and they don't really know who the person is and what they're doing in legislature, what they're doing at the Texas Capitol, and how they're actually helping us and why they're in the position they are. And then they start believing false narratives, and before long, they're on the wrong side of the fence against someone that they would otherwise support.
Yeah, I completely agree. One of the good things about this podcast is we get to share the information without ever having to actually speak to some of these people. But we will have some guests on this podcast eventually, but for now it's just the two of us.
All right, well, we're definitely going to have some guests. I'm working on that, but yeah, right now it's just the two of us, and we've got a list of topics for all the listeners at home, Texas Tech students, staff, faculty, state reps that listen to us.
I definitely want to start with the 250-year anniversary of the United States. As of Monday, Memorial Day, we are starting, or Trump is starting, a year-long celebration for 250 years of the United States, and it's going to be a year-long celebration. And starting next month in D.C., they're going to have a parade starting our festivities of the 200-year anniversary. And because next year is our official 250-year anniversary, he is trying to basically make it a year-long celebration because we've lasted 250 years.
That honestly feels like something that's long overdue. You know, I mean, we have 4th of July and we celebrate our independence, and, you know, veterans have their day and they deserve that. But we've never really just celebrated being America like that. You know, how long have we been a country compared to other countries? Because you watch the news, countries change hands left and right. They're always in war. They don't have a democracy. They don't have the type of government and the freedom that we have here. And I think people tend to take that for granted and forget about, you know, what it took to get to where we are now.
Yeah, I completely agree. Just like in college football, it's 90 minutes of us, except for, in this case, it's 250 years of us. We basically get to tell the story of how we fought against the British, became our own independent country, and eventually spread across the country and became what we are now.
Yeah, and that's important because, so I don't have like a formal educational background, and what that means is I didn't really go to school a lot as a kid. I got taken out at an early age because I was really sick. But even I remember learning about the Redcoats, the Civil War, World War One. But now, you know, you turn around and ask people, and unless they're a poli-sci or a history major or someone that just has interest in that area, they don't know about any of that. The history, as far as they're concerned, didn't happen. They're not aware of it. And it's sad that you really don't understand why you're an American and what it means to be an American.
I completely agree. One of my favorite parts about high school was history class. I used to have a teacher in my junior year of high school. We would always go back and forth between who knew more about history and who didn't. We always had the argument over, did you know this or did you know that? One of my favorite parts about that is just the fact that I love history so much and made me want to share it with other people.
Yeah, I mean, and even I'm guilty of it. There's, you know, it never hurts to go back and refresh. There's things that I have to rewatch, reread, relearn about. Because, you know, going to school, you have a lot on your plate and you forget because you study so much and you're cramming and being a diligent student, studious. It's really important not to forget where you come from because you never know where you're going to go in life, you know. I went from not going to school to having to work for farmers. I got my GED, and then I decided I wanted to go to college, and then I took a rare disease, and next thing I know, I'm in politics and was at the Capitol not long ago presenting legislation proposals. And through all of that, you know, I had to remember, you know, number one, why I'm here, which I always put God first in everything I do. And I also had to remember, you know, why I'm here and who got me here and why I'm proud to be an American. And you don't really see that a lot no more when people are advocating or fighting when it comes to politics.
Yeah, I completely agree. I think a lot of people, especially in our party, know a lot or a little bit more about history than I'd say the other side does, because we actually enjoy having our freedoms and know what it actually means to be an American citizen. I think one of the best parts is just the fact that we get to actually make this podcast without any wrongdoing. It's our First Amendment.
Yeah, that's freedom of speech 101, you know, unless some sort of weird cyber lawing and policing comes along. God forbid that happens. But do you think, because I know it's a popular topic in Lubbock a lot when we're talking about America, people at different town halls, meetings, and events, they often bring up, you know, people should recognize that Texas is a republic. Do you think that'll come into play during this celebration and recognition?
It's definitely a possibility, but because we are part of the United States, we might have a bigger celebration than most states in the United States just because we're proud to be an American state, and we're probably one of the biggest, by far the biggest state in the United States.
You said that that celebration officially begins January 1st, 26, correct?
It actually started this past Monday.
It started this Monday. I have to wonder if there's going to be like an exception to fireworks and stuff like that, or if they're going to just leave that alone and we'll have to figure out, you know, something else to party with, like bonfires and stuff like that.
Well, I think the main portion of this celebration, year-long celebration, is certain areas and certain cities throughout this year-long celebration are going to have fireworks shows, of course, and just celebrating our nation's history. Like, I know it's a tradition on 4th of July that Mount Rushmore does one of the biggest fireworks shows in all of the country. And who knows, within this year-long celebration, there could be more fireworks shows.
Yeah. And, you know, if it's too, I mean, let's be honest, we're in West Texas, we're in a desert, it's dry here, and we're on top of the Cap Rock, so we don't get all the rain the rest of the world or the rest of Texas is wishing they weren't getting.
Yeah.
I have to wonder, you know, because I used to go to San Antonio when I was a kid with my parents on vacation, and I remember seeing these crazy laser light shows. It almost makes me wonder, you know, if you approach Texas Tech the right way about it, you know, could there be potential for the city and Texas Tech to kind of collaborate somewhere, maybe even at Buffalo Lake, and do some sort of laser spectacle / parade event?
Yeah, that could be definitely a good idea. Or just like how we did the opening football game this past season and do a drone show.
Yeah, drones. I always forget about those, and that's a that's a whole political topic on itself right now. But yeah, that's something that could definitely happen, and they could even do that just right here, you know, if they would just open the stadium to the public and say, hey, we're doing this for y'all, we're partnering, here's some concession, let's run a parade down through Broadway, have it kind of come through Tech, show people the university. They could lead them right up to the stadium and have it set up just right, and I think it would be really cool.
Yeah, I completely agree. Maybe even have, like, some festivities on the field and do all that kind of other stuff, like maybe have a cornhole tournament on one side and maybe some sort of events going on throughout the field and in different areas, and then eventually at night doing a drone show.
Oh yeah, you could easily do that. They could do the bell toll. They could also do the 21-gun salute. There's ways to pull that off that's safe.
Maybe even do a flyover. Hopefully we get one next season for football. We didn't have one this year, but that's one of my favorite parts about home football games is normally we...
Yeah, That's one of my favorite parts, too, is the home football games and the flyovers. I mean, that's just America in a nutshell. And that's why I like going to baseball games. That's why I miss when we had the – Lubbock used to have a baseball team, the Lubbock Crickets, and we also had the Lubbock Cotton Kings. And at that time, for a long time – we had the Reese Air Force Base, and that's become another political topic we'll talk about later on. But, you know, I have a feeling that as Reese Air Force Base, if it becomes what we're hearing it's going to become, I have a feeling that stuff will come back, because when it was an Air Force Base, and it's not going to become another Air Force Base, but there may be some stuff out there that we will – get flyovers again, especially with Texas Tech partnering with that, thanks to Jody Arrington and our state rep Carl Tepper and everyone else that's been involved in that.
Yeah, I completely agree. Hopefully bring back the patriotism to West Texas.
Yeah, because it's, I don't know if it's just me, but, and maybe I'm just not as involved since I got sick, because I don't go out as much as I used to, and I got into politics, and I'm always busy with school, but a lot of times it just feels very dry and bland out here in West Texas when it comes to patriotism.
Yeah, I completely agree. I mean, hopefully with this podcast and maybe making some connections over the summer, we might be able to bring some patriotism back to West Texas.
Yeah, for sure. I think it's a good thing, and then you know, students are going to find out the truth because of our podcast. I think the signal is really going to help remove a lot of the static that's going around, because, you know, even on campus, and I don't want to throw anything really out there, but I do know, since I'm a member of the Tech College Republicans, and I talk to students trying to recruit them in and encourage them to get involved and that their voice matters, especially with the way things are right now politically. They'll tell me, you know, they're afraid to come forward. They're afraid to claim partisan. They're afraid to be on a Republican or conservative platform because they don't want other students, you know, going for their jugular, so to speak, and outing them and annexing them and losing all their friends. And you know, it's become a really polarizing thing that it shouldn't be, just to have politics, regardless of what side you're on, where you claim you be. I think it really needs to get normalized and not be viewed as, oh, you're a Republican, so you're extreme and I can't associate with you, or you're a Democrat and, you know, you're also extreme. I mean, those exist. They without a doubt, those people do exist. We've seen it. It's always probably going to be there to some extent. But not everyone is like that. There are people that are level-headed, decent people, good Republicans, good Democrats. We've seen them work together. You know, even though our current, I would argue the current Democratic Party that we have in Congress is not one of the better ones that we've had over the years, but they've definitely got to get it together compared to the Republicans, which have always stood really strong. You know, you go all the way back to Abraham Lincoln when you talk about Republicans and stuff like that.
Yeah.
We've always had a strong standing because we've always been the ones that put God first and used Christ as our foundation. And I think that's why we don't have a lot of the problems the Democrats often run into. But, you know, normalizing just being a Republican and being in politics, you know, not being afraid to claim you're a Republican or conservative, that needs to be a thing again, because I remember a time not so long ago when there was a young lady at Texas Tech, and I'm not going to drop her name, but you'll know who I'm talking about. She was into game hunting, and she had quite a following, and she was proud to be an American, proud to be a Texan. She was very vocal, and it was a different time, and people really got behind her. And then these people come and go, and suddenly, you know, if I go out there and tell people I'm a Republican or a conservative, nobody wants to talk to me. Nobody wants to shake my hand. In fact, I've had students spit at me in the free speech area. I've been called, you know, told that I support rape and pedophilia and all this weird stuff. And I'm like, that's not what Republicans are about at all. You've got it all wrong. And then you go and try to explain who you are and what you're doing and tell them the good you do for the other students. And they just walk off. They don't want to hear it no more. And, you know, I don't know what it's going to take, but I think this is a step in the right direction.
Yeah, this podcast is definitely going to be that step towards opening up to other people and maybe trying to get students out of their comfort zone to maybe come and talk to us. This is a safe place. We are amazing people. We just want to hear what you guys think. And one of the best ways to do that is just don't be afraid and come talk to us. We are humans. We can understand what you go through because we're going through the same thing. And one of the biggest points that I personally think is a stepping stone towards getting those people is maybe take a step out of your comfort zone. Sometimes it may not be the best, but sometimes you got to take that leap. And it took a lot from me to try and get toward a group that I could actually be comfortable with. And whenever I found TCR and the amazing people here, I knew I was home. Because the amount of people that we have right now, and with us colliding with the conservative group on campus as well, we're just a bunch of Christian, Republican, and conservative people who just want to hear other people's opinions.
Yeah, we're not... You know, we're not out to hurt anybody. We're not out to shame anybody. You know, we do believe in accountability, transparency, integrity, and conservative principles and Republican values. But that doesn't mean that, you know, our attitude is there's the enemy. We got to get rid of them. That's not what we're about. You know, freedom of speech is a thing. Freedom of religion is a thing. You know, you talk about freedom of religion. I'm a campaign advisor for someone running for U.S. Senate, and we have two different beliefs. And, you know, that doesn't faze me at all because that's America. That is literally what we're about, freedom of religion, freedom of choice. You know, we have the choice to be Republicans and conservatives. No one makes us do it. And I think if you get students out of their comfort zone – while also educating them, you know, on what it means to be a Republican, what it means to be a conservative, why it's different, and how that you can be a conservative Republican if you are. Or you can. I have another friend who's in TCR, and he's more of a progressive Republican in some sense when you talk to him. That's okay. You know, we're not out to ruin anyone's day. There are issues here at Texas Tech. You know, like I take issue with everything from parking violations and that setup to stuff involving freedom of speech zoning to getting a ticket for if I'm concealed carrying and somebody says that I'm printing and they want to write me a ticket, I'm not afraid to challenge that. I'm not afraid to challenge it for other students, but I'm not going to go out there and say, you know, okay, well, you should lose your job just because I don't agree with what you're saying, or you shouldn't go to school here. No, I do think that Texas Tech was originally founded on some conservative principles, and I think we need to get back to that. But that doesn't mean that we believe in one world order at all.
Yeah, I completely agree. I think the best way to describe the work that we're trying to do is said by John F. Kennedy. It's not what our country can do for us, it's what we can do for our country. And by bringing back patriotism and hopefully a little bit of politics, maybe we can try and bring back the America that we've always dreamed of.
Yeah, and you know, when you talk about Texas Tech and you talk about people that recognize Texas Tech, Donald Trump, he loves Texas Tech. Jody Arrington, you know, he's big Texas Tech fan. He's a Red Raider through and through. And I'm even, you know, I've had conflicts and taken issue, and I'm still proud to be here. I stayed at Texas Tech. I had a chance to go to Princeton. I had a chance to leave and was going to be sent away over some disagreements. And I stayed here because I'm proud. I'm a proud Texan. I'm a proud patriot. I'm a proud American. I'm proud to be a Red Raider. I love Texas Tech, and I wanted to help the students. I stayed for the students, and I want to help them succeed and open doors. And I think I've proven that time and time again over the last year, especially this past semester. And I think, you know, when you do talk about patriotism, you know, people will tell you that Texas Tech is one of the most patriotic universities there is. There is the issue that as far as students are concerned, the students themselves are just not as active politically. You know, even if you've got student government, SGA, you got a lot of senators on there, a lot of members, but you don't really see them getting out in the community and getting involved in local politics and state politics. And, I mean, look at us. We went just as a separate org. And this is nothing against student government. You know, that's a great thing to have for any university. But we got involved in town halls with the LISD bond. We've been involved with elections. We've been involved with taking students to the Capitol and presenting legislative proposals. You know, we're not someone that just has a title. We actively work and have boots on the ground and support our leaders in office, whether it's Jody Arrington, Donald Trump, Carl Tepper, Speaker Burroughs, who, you know, I'm the one that was getting Red Raider support for Carl Tepper and Speaker Burroughs when Tepper called for people to support Burroughs against Cook. And so, yeah, I think this is a step in the right direction for patriotism, and I look forward to eventually having those gentlemen on this podcast in the future.
Yeah, I completely agree. This is definitely going to be a good podcast, and all we're trying to do is bring patriotism back to Texas Tech and West Texas and try and make some sort of sense to fellow Red Raiders to maybe join our organization and try and get people out here.
Right. I mean, you know, you got to be willing to fight for your country, and that doesn't always mean go sign up and join the military, put a rifle in your hands, and go into basic training. No, you can fight for your country on your homeland by getting in politics. In fact, we've actually got a list of topics here to talk about here today. Why don't you kind of tell us what you got here?
So one of the main pieces that I wanted to talk about today is the One Big Beautiful Bill. It's currently going through the U.S. Senate right now. It already passed through the House. It'll more than likely get changed through the Senate and then get shipped back to the House with some minor changes or major changes. But for the most part, all of the big points of this bill is going to stay the same between funding our border security and making sure deportations is still effective and making sure immigration is staying the way that it's going with ICE and the Trump administration with their mass deportation and increasing military spending by taking a little bit of our taxes and putting it towards our military, similar to how back in the original Trump administration, how we were basically the most feared country in the world, and the Biden administration kind of tore that down whenever they took us out of Iraq, which was a very big deal to me, at least.
Yeah, that was a big deal, and it's not just they took us out of there, it's the way they did it.
By leaving all of our equipment and everything, the millions that we spent over there basically got left, and now the armies in Iraq have our equipment.
And you know, now that time has passed and we we see what Doge is doing, and we've seen all the money that was getting funneled to terrorists and stuff like that. I look back on that as a handout is what that was to me. I believe it was done deliberately, and I believe it was a way to give them millions and millions of dollars of military equipment, also hand them over some of our military intelligence stuff that they should have never gotten access to. And I think, you know, pulling out of Iraq was the guys to do that, and then saying, leave all that stuff behind, you know. Now, yeah, the military tends to leave stuff behind. That's a thing. But there was stuff over there that, like, perfectly good Black Hawk helicopters and other
million
things.
Million-dollar airplanes, million-dollar tanks, million-dollar vehicles, basically all just left there for everybody to basically free range. And it's something that we can probably never come back from.
Yeah, I mean, it's going to... I foresee at some point it's going to come back on us. I don't know when. I don't know how. I do not look forward to it. But I do believe we're going to see remnants in that area from the Biden administration one day used against us.
Yeah, I completely agree. And another point on this one big beautiful bill is the fact that we're bringing back fossil fuels, which is a huge plus for Texas and New Mexico states, because we're bringing back the oil and gas industry because the Biden administration shut it down with their Green Act, and the Green Act is being torn apart, which means more revenue for New Mexico and Texas. Basically, because we're bringing back the most funded and most revenue from each state.
Yeah, and you know, I'm personally not against some green energy initiatives. And when I say that, I like solar panels. I think they could be utilized in a way for the greater good if used right.
Mm-hmm.
But what you don't see people talking about, like, have you driven through Texas ever, Caleb?
Yes, many times.
Okay, and you see all the windmills?
Oh, yeah.
You ever notice when you get to, like, your more rural counties, a lot of those windmills, they have, like, long brown streaks and stuff running through them? They don't tell people about the maintenance and how bad those turbines actually leak and the damage that they do to the environment. They're mm-hmm. like, no, here's your free energy. It's clean energy. Okay, but did you tell them about all the damage you're doing to the land that thing is on, and all the oil going down into the earth because of that, and the cost of maintenance on those? Have you told anyone that? Have you told them about the land rights, the air rights, and everything else that goes along with this, and who's got control of those and who buys them? I mean, you know, there's and we've kind of dealt with it some this 89th session, but there is a legitimate reason to be concerned about foreign entities purchasing your energy rights, your air rights, your mineral rights, your land rights, and all these things. And what happens? Texas wakes up one day and Texas no longer owns Texas. And not only that, if they were to get it back, then you have to do some serious reconnaissance and try and clean up the mess, the pollution, and the damage that has been done, whether it's wildlife, whether it's just the land in general for farming. You know, it's literally damaging the land in a way that we just can't go back and repair it immediately.
Yeah, I completely agree. There's a scene in the TV show Landman. I don't know if you've seen it, but it's basically a TV show about West Texas and the Midland area and the oil industry. And there's a scene in one of the episodes that talks about wind turbines and how terrible they are for the environment. And just the fact that one wind turbine can power up at least two or three pump jacks and oil industry functions is just crazy to think about.
Yeah, and I mean, you kind of have a similar background to me. I mean, we diverge. There's an age gap, but I grew up, you know, working for farmers when I went to work. And so you get into slack adjusters and all the adult Legos that you love to talk about.
Mechanics. I love mechanics.
But no, you're right. And, you know, I think one way a lot of that stuff they got away with, since they're doing it on dry land, it's a lot harder to spot and argue versus doing it out in the open ocean where the whole world would see it and it would become a big deal and you'd have all these environmentalists going on. And I also kind of wonder, where are the environmentalists over the windmill thing? Because I've also seen the videos where they're having trouble dealing with the blades on a lot of these that they replace, and they don't have nowhere to take them. Nobody's wanting to scrap them in some situations, and they're having to bury them. And, you know, I have legitimate concerns about, you know, what is that going to do to the environment?
Yeah, I completely agree. But this is the portion that I was going to show you because it is just powerful. Because that's all we're used to, and it's what powers our homes. It's what makes basically everything that we know to man, between plastics, these microphones, everything that we're used to comes from some sort of oil byproduct.
Yeah, and you're right, and he's right, you know. When you talk about the Biden administration, and, you know, it's not a jab at your people that want to conserve energy and conserve resources. Like, I'm pretty sure we understand that, and that's why we continue to improve vehicles and machines and motors to use less and less oil as best we can. But they're right, you know, eventually we're going to run out of the resources, the alternatives that they've suggested. And we are not going to run out of oil for a very long time. And I was listening to what he was saying, and there's also untapped oil reserves that we have not been to, not gone to. I don't think people really realize how big Texas really is. Like, how many states can you fit in Texas? And then you're not taking into account other countries' oil reserves. We're going to be sustained for quite a long time. And I know he kind of dogged on Tesla there, but isn't it funny to kind of look at Tesla and what Elon Musk is doing and just to think, you know, He chose the Republicans, and the Democrats who once supported him went batshit crazy and just flipped on him. Despite, you know, you've got stuff like that where they dog on him. You know, he does it the way it should be done. And, you know, he's even said his goal is to not have to exist, right? He doesn't want his company to have to exist.
Yeah.
He's got the right idea. These other people, they want to keep coming up with stuff over and over and over and taking our money from it. Whereas your people in the oil field, I mean, yeah, they need money to sustain, but they're not going to come up with endless reasons to just get in your back pocket while damaging the environment. They go out of their way to protect the environment. And I think that's also something a lot of Texans and Americans don't realize is what they put into trying to protect the environment.
I definitely agree with you. One of the big points that – or one of my favorite points that he made in that show is what it actually takes to mine lithium. Have you ever seen pictures of what an actual lithium mine looks like?
Yeah, I mean that's – is lithium the one where they've got, like, the kids also mining in some countries? And
in some countries, yes. It takes...
Oh, my God, look at that.
It basically takes nothing but manpower and machines to mine lithium. And it can go anywhere from 10,000 feet into the ground. And it's basically destroying 90% of the areas where they're actually mining lithium.
90%?
Yeah.
Wow.
It's basically destroying part of their land. And it's unfortunate because everybody needs their own land. And I guess the only way to actually find lithium is by mining. And it's unfortunate that it has to be that way, but if you look at some of these pictures that we're looking at right now, it takes a lot.
I mean, that makes the oil industry look like Madonna's Like a Virgin song. I mean, wow.
There's a lot more energy preservance in other countries similar to lithium mining. And oil industry always gets blamed for being the most, how would you word that, non-safe or environmentally safe. But yeah, if you look at these pictures, we're basically doing basically the righter thing.
Yeah, we're doing it in a way that is smarter, more efficient, safer, better for the environment. Looking at these pictures, and I'm not an expert or anything, but some of these, like, what is this? Is this just like a
those are lithium fields. So after they extract it from those mines, they'll set it right in these fields, and for a little while they'll sit there, but eventually they'll be taken out and turned into batteries.
Yeah, see, I don't see us making... Well, how should I word that? It's going to sound weird, but I don't see us making oil fields. We have the oil field that you work in, but I don't see us pumping oil out of the ground and then digging these man-made lakes and filling them with oil. I mean, that just seems like you're just bringing the poison up out of the earth and then... Setting it on top of it where it can do the harm that it normally would otherwise.
Mm-hmm. And at least oil is from basically decomposed dinosaurs. And lithium, on the other hand, is a completely toxic chemical that can ruin landscapes.
And now you've got me wondering how many dinosaurs it takes to power my truck.
Wow.
That is insane. And I know in some of these countries, because I asked a second ago, but I'm kind of remembering because I watch another podcast. I'm not going to drop any names for legal reasons, but he's talked about similar stuff. I think he was dealing with, like, maybe sapphire mines or something. And the kids that get exposed to this stuff, because when you get to the other countries, you know, here in Texas and in America – you've got OSHA and all these safety protocols and training and equipment. And in a lot of these countries, you see little kids running around in just sometimes a pair of shorts, if anything at all, getting these chemicals all over their bodies.
Mm-hmm. And majority of lithium mining comes from South America and Africa. So on top of those chemicals, we're doing those to those people.
In a minute, you're telling me that how much does this make again?
Quite a bit.
And it's a lot of it's coming out of Africa.
90 or at least 75% of it.
See, I'd like to know how they profit on that and what the profit is for them. And that's just, you know, out of politics, because I think the one of the ambassadors, I think he's, I don't think they use the term president in Africa. I think there's another term. But he told Trump, you know, sorry, I don't have an airplane for you or something. There's like a meme going around.
Mm-hmm.
But it really makes you wonder, even though I wouldn't support the lithium industry the way they're doing it,
mm-hmm.
where is all that money going that they're still having all the famine and problems that the U.S. is having to intervene on?
For the most part, the production goes through the other countries, and then somehow, magically, it pops into our country in the form of a battery.
That's just crazy, and it really makes you wonder, because I know, you know, if you look at other countries, let's take, and this is an extreme example, but let's take Dubai with all their oil.
Oh yeah,
they put that money right back into the country it's coming out of. Granted, you know, you could argue it's done in a way that doesn't always help the less fortunate. And we see that at a local level too, and we can talk about that later. But I've never, you know, if they're making that much money, I would assume there's probably billions of dollars for an operation like that that's coming in somewhere. It makes you wonder, number one, it makes you wonder, you know, why aren't they taking better care of their country? And I know Africa's massive. I'm not saying it's not. But there are problems there that I think they should be addressing, not us. I think, you know, by the grace of God, we are able to address them because of how great our country is. And number two, you know, it really does make you appreciate being an American and that we don't have that and that we're not losing out on money like that to other countries, or at least we're fixing to not be losing out, because Trump's also, he's got a deal coming through where you're talking about lithium batteries and the foreign market. You're fixing to, I think it works where if you buy an American-made car, like, mm-hmm. you know, Ford, Chevy, Dodge, or, yeah, Ford, Chevy, and Dodge, Chrysler, you know, et cetera, you can take it off or put it on your income tax somehow.
Really?
Have you heard about that?
I have not.
Go ahead and kind of pull it up and see if we can find something on that. It was really interesting. I don't know if that's in the Big Beautiful Bill, but I know it was talked about right before the Big Beautiful Bill was getting real popular. Yeah, Trump's tax break on car loans. The provision of the GOP, yeah, it's in the One Big Beautiful Bill. So, yeah, the provision of the GOP's One Big Beautiful Bill Act aims to make auto loan interest tax deductible for 2025 through 2028 for vehicles with final assembly in the U.S. The deduction is limited to $10,000 per year and starts phasing out for income levels above $100,000 to $200,000 a year for couples. So if you're a successful college student, now's your time to get yourself a whip.
I mean, I'm happy with mine because it's an older model and I trust the original makers and the original engines and everything like that. I just trust them, and not that I don't trust nowadays vehicles because they are very tech savvy and can stop you on a dime. But in my opinion, I trust older vehicles, but just because it's American made. And I mean, not that today's vehicles are American made, but just back in a decent time when vehicles were actually easier to manufacture and when we actually had all the resources in our own country to manufacture them.
Oh yeah. And like, so I'm sure, you know, everyone remembers the pandemic, you know, right before I was flatlining in ICU, and I quit working for Farmers so I could go to college. And even at that time, we would have to have certain parts made and shipped in, and there was like 6 and 8 month waiting periods, and then there would be other delays going on. And then you look at stuff now. Let's take American Muscle into account. I was looking at this the other day because I'm also friends with the president of the Tech College Republicans, and he's a real big fan of Dodge and Mopar, and I don't blame him. I am too. But I started looking up like what was the new Charger or Challenger. And one of them, or maybe both, they were trying to do like an electric muscle car.
Yeah, I remember hearing about that. It took off for a little while on social media because the car culture kept making fun of it because it actually had a sort of speaker on the outside to make it sound like a muscle car. But in all honesty, it's an electric car.
Yeah, and I think with this bill, American Muscle is here to stay for another 100 years or more.
Oh yeah. And it kind of sucks because Chevy this past year stopped making Camaros.
Really?
Yeah.
I haven't followed that too well, but that's surprising because you see Camaros everywhere.
Mm-hmm. And it really just sucks because it's America's history. And it's probably one of the biggest cars in all of history, except for the Dodge Charger.
Yeah, and I mean, you know, I think the bigger picture with this bill is it's going to save a lot of different industries in America, whether people realize it or not. It's going to keep them going. It's going to keep them going strong. It's going to help small business. It's going to help fossil fuel industry. It's going to help...
And us as citizens as well, because of the no tax on tips and no tax on overtime.
Yeah, I mean, and that was one thing that I never understood. You know, as a conservative, I look at taxes as a form of theft. And correct me if I'm wrong, but wasn't the Boston Tea Party a thing?
Yep,
and all over taxes. And we've been, with the Biden administration and everybody else, they've been fighting to raise our taxes. You are doing the exact thing that we fought to get away from. Mm-hmm. And I always thought it was the strangest, most backwards thing that made no sense to me as an American, as a student. Even if I step away from politics, I'm like, why are we fighting to get away, or why are we fighting to have what we fought to get away from? It made no sense.
The Boston Tea Party was basically England trying to tax the United States because at that time we were just colonies, and they tried taxing us because we originally came from there, and because of that we basically said, you're on our turf. No, you don't.
Yeah, and then, you know, you look at what the Democratic Party was doing, and it's kind of like, you guys are just doing to us what they did centuries ago.
Mm-hmm.
And largely for the same reasons, because you're all pocketing out of this, you know. And when I say all, I don't mean like your average citizen here in Lubbock, but your people that are up in the government and part of all these bills and authors on them and initiatives. It made no sense to me, and I had a legitimate concern that they were trying to bankrupt America slowly but surely. so that they could kind of hold a little bit more power and drive America into the direction they wanted it to go in.
Yeah, and I think the biggest portion of that is sending all the funds to Ukraine. And I think that's where we lost a majority of our money, because it was supposedly being invested into the Ukrainian army, but it kind of just disappeared off the books.
Yeah, and
which basically sent the United States into a massive debt that we're slowly starting to turn around.
Yeah, when money goes missing in general, it's bad, but when it's something that's that large, you know, it doesn't take a group of scientists to kind of figure out something's gone wrong.
Yep, and now it's turned down to one man, and that man is Elon Musk and Doge.
Yeah, and, you know, you talk about Elon Musk. The Democratic Party, they used to really, like I talked about earlier, they used to really back him and support him and wanted him to be their champion, so to speak. And that didn't exactly happen, because he didn't agree with a lot of their rhetoric and the stuff he was learning and finding out and the stuff they were for.
Yep, that is 100% true.
So you're talking about money. What do you think about funding border security here in America and Texas?
I am all for it, because not only during the Biden administration, basically we had free will over our southern border, and a lot of people came over, and now they're being sent back to their original countries because they're not welcome here, at least not illegally. If you come in legally, you're allowed to become a citizen. But if you come in and not go through the right process, then you're basically going straight back home.
And, you know, I've always wanted a platform to say this on, and I'm glad we have it now. Your younger generations of Americans, by and large, the ones that are, you know, they're born in America, I don't think they all realize, if you or I were to break into Russia or break into North Korea, what happens? We don't get a slap on the wrist, some papers, and sent back home. We don't get to live very much longer after we do that.
No, we don't.
And here in America, we say, well, your life matters. You're a human being. We're not going to kill you. You made a mistake. You did wrong. Shame on you. You get to go back to your country.
Yeah.
I don't think that is such a bad option compared to the other.
I completely agree. And nothing says more American than go back to your own country.
Yeah, I mean, and you know, America's come a long way, because even not so long ago, you, and in some ways you still will, if you're on someone's land, you get shot indefinitely back in years ago. I'm talking back when we didn't even have cards.
Or a couple hundred years ago.
Yeah. And that's still true in some ways today. You know, if with the Second Amendment, you know, especially in Texas, if someone is breaking into your home and they're on your land, you have a right to defend yourself in certain instances. And I don't think they really realize that we've gone from, you've come into Texas, you're on land you're not supposed to be, you're going to get shot, to, hey, we're not going to shoot you no more. We recognize human decency now. We support due process. We're going to take you in. We're going to feed you. You'll probably get a chance to shower. You're going to be in a cell. It's not going to be that great, but you made a mistake, so we're not going to reward you for it. But we're going to make sure you're taken care of and that you live to make it back home while we also send you back home.
Yeah, I completely agree. There's nothing wrong with trying to do the right thing and send them back home rather than assassinating them.
Yeah, and I mean, you know, I've been to Mexico multiple times. I like Mexico. I mean, when I say that, I'm not talking about all the other stuff going on. I'm just saying I think there's certain parts of Mexico that are really pretty and that are relaxing and enjoyable. I enjoy the cuisine, the sights to see. But if I ever went over there illegally, I would argue they have every right to throw me in a cell, and that's my fault. That is no one else's fault. That is my fault. That's the choice I made, and I would have to live with the repercussions.
Yep, that is 100% true.
Yeah, and then, you know, the flip side to that is, you know, what is it there? You just go to jail for a while, and then you have to get United Nations involved, maybe, if they don't send you back. We have a decently good relationship, I think, with immigration issues between America and Mexico in some respect to that. But, you know, if you do that over here, it's a guarantee you're just going to get sent back. And they'll figure out, you know, were you from Mexico? Were you from Venezuela? Were you from Russia, Germany, and so on, so that you're not, you know, a German getting sent to Mexico where no one understands you and you can't read anything. No, we're going to get you back to your homeland one way or the other.
Yeah, that is 100%.
So, with funding the border security, has there been any legislation or bills or any talk about how they're going to do that? Because I know a bunch of us went, thanks to Dr. John Thomas and his wife, Carrie Thomas, that are local conservatives here in Lubbock, Texas. They took us into the Operation Hope banquet, and we got to spend time with James O'Keefe, and man, the stuff
he
we
was
saw
an
about
interesting
the
guy,
dude, the stuff that
the story that he gave us, I was empowered, and I just wanted to thank him for basically spreading the truth about what actually goes on.
Yeah, I mean, and that's exactly what we want to do with this podcast. We don't want to, like, sneak attack anybody and record them and put it online. No.
No.
But he's an investigative reporter. He's doing what he believes he has to do to get the truth out. Sometimes certain situations you have to do that, and that's how he built his career. But he gets the truth out to the people, for better or worse, and that's what we want to do with this podcast. But yeah, some of the stuff he was showing, I mean, you had Border Patrol, Border Security. They could tell you, and they knew, you know, where cartel was, what time they were there, what they were doing, how they were cutting holes in the walls and borders, how they were coming in. They weren't even reporting a lot of it.
Mm-mm.
I mean, you know, I'm all for funding border security. But I need some sort of assurance they're going to do their job after what I saw.
Yeah. And with the Trump administration, and if you go onto their social media accounts, they've been doing a lot more work. And I think majority of immigrants that are trying to come into this country illegally by border crossing, they are now scared to actually come across because they know they're going to get caught.
Well, yeah, and, you know, with Trump being commander-in-chief, you're talking about a guy that doesn't mess around. If he says he's going to do something, he's going to do it. And that's just the way he is, and I like that about him. It's very rare to look in the history books and see a president do everything they said they were going to do and do throughout their time in office, and that's something I really like. Because it's true, you do have border security actually going to work. Because I remember bits and pieces of the documentary James O'Keefe was showing us as he talked to us. And he said there was an issue where they were being told not to interfere, don't do anything.
Mm-hmm.
And that was disturbing to me as an American, hearing that people that we hire as Americans in America to defend, serve, and protect America's land and soil are being told to do the opposite.
And I think the majority of it is the last administration. And because of what they did in the last administration by opening up all the borders, basically said a giant green sign that said, come on in, we're open.
Yeah, I mean, it definitely did. You had people getting literally transported to the countries where there was an ease of access into America. And they were coming in by the droves, and it was bad. I mean, and we can make this a little bit more palatable here. Let's stop talking just about America for a second. Let's talk about Texas. Let's talk about Liberty County and Colony Ridge, with what's been going on there with all the illegal immigrants taking out loans and to build homes and land over there in Texas. I mean, I've been following that story for a while. And I don't know the truth to what's going on because I'm not from there. I've seen some of the names. But I don't think a lot of that would have been possible had Biden and Harris not been placed in office, because they really opened the doors to a lot of the problems we're still struggling with here today.
Yeah, and I guess one of my favorite parts about the Biden administration is what Greg Abbott did with all the immigration by loading them up on buses and taking them to D.C. and California to all these Democratic political figures such as Nancy Pelosi, Joe Biden, Kamala Harris, and all of their houses, and basically dropping them on their doorstep saying, you guys let these guys in here, you guys deal with them.
Yeah, and that was clearly done on purpose, right? There's some strategy at play there. They took time to come up with that so that, you know, there's a bigger plan at play there. And it involves steering America in the direction they wanted, selling us out. And then at the end of the day, they made a profit. And if things would have went south, they probably had places they could have gone outside the U.S. I would like to think or suspect that they think they would have been safe at. Now, whether or not they would have actually been safe or not, I don't know. I don't want to get into that, because you get into some real corrupted dealings when we talk about this. Because, you know, Jody Arrington was right when he told Americans, you guys don't realize just how much corruption there is in our government right now. Mm-hmm. And especially with the stuff James O'Keefe was bringing up, where there are people in Congress right now involved in trafficking of children and women and families that are making money off of these immigrants, foreigners, and also Americans. I mean, that's a real problem that we need to address before we start giving and supporting other countries.
Yeah. It definitely is a big problem that we used to face, and now that the Border Patrol and the Trump administration are fixing, it's starting to look a little bit better.
You know, and with stuff getting better, you know, America's pretty well known for our health care, and I know right now a lot of people are freaking out and telling me, you know, oh, you've got a disease that's going to kill you. You got to have a heart and double lung transplant. You're fixing to be eligible in November for insurance. And you get into Medicaid and all that because I'm a disabled college student. And I live off disability. And they're making cuts to Medicaid and all that. I don't think people realize what all we've really had to deal with due to the previous administration. I personally am not seeing anything negative. There are people that take advantage of the system. That's what they're really going after.
With the Medicaid and stamps. Basically, if you're a illegal immigrant and you're off of Medicaid and stamps, then you're basically going to get kicked off of there and more than likely deported. But if you're an American citizen and you're working, then you basically get Medicare and stamps. But if you're not working and you're just living off of food stamps, then it's not going to work out for you.
Yeah. And I haven't looked at it. I don't know how that plays into someone like me where I'm disabled and I do need food stamps. But I do know that, you know, when I use them, when I have to use them, 'cause I am on them and I don't get much, but I get enough. When I go to the store, you know, I'm buying ground turkey, chicken. If it's on sale and I can get a decent amount of it, I'll get fish,
fruits
and vegetables. But then you see other people, and I mean, you're talking about people that load up, you know, two grocery carts full of nothing but sodas and chips. I mean, and you'll see them at Walmart all the time. And they'll have two or three baskets, and then one basket will have some food and some different things in there, but the junk food, it's like a 90% to 10% ratio on what they spend that on.
And one of the good parts about the Trump administration is RFK Jr. and everything that he's doing, because he's also trying to crack down on that as well. Between all the food preservatives in certain foods, like he's trying to completely shut down Uncrustables because apparently there's a bunch of bad stuff in it for people. And he's basically doing the work for us without having to... the repercussions of what we go through. And he also does all the food inspections for the most part. That's one of his main jobs, is making sure that the American citizens get the right food and making sure it's safe for us to eat.
Yeah, and I mean, you know, I don't agree with everything he said, and you know, a big one, my major, you know, even though I want my MD or an MD, JD, because I'm really invested in politics, especially since going to the Capitol and making friends with Republican politician Perla Hopkins. Shout out to her. I'm a big fan of yours. You'll always have family here in West Texas. And trust me, the college students that are Republicans, they love you. They respect you. They're forever grateful for you. When you talk about a lot of the stuff he's talked about with my degree, the way it's set up, there's certain things that I can look at and I can't talk on. Like, I can't, as a psychology major, I'm not a clinician. I'm not a doctor. I'm not even a practicing therapist or a student who's got someone over them that they practice over. So I cannot legally evaluate or diagnose you. And I do think sometimes, and this isn't just picking on him, this is just in general, because it happens. We're seeing a lot of it with educational laws here in Texas. People get out of their scope just when it involves politics. And you get people that don't know what they're doing talking about politics and pushing things. I think he's misspoke, having said that, on a few things. I don't think he's doing a bad job. I think he's doing a good job. I think he made the right choice by aligning with Trump. But I want to be very clear on this. I do have friends with autism, and they're very successful. One of them's an internationally known best-selling author. I've worked very close with different researchers to support students with autism. I've hosted events to support students with autism here at Texas Tech University. Now, I do believe in them and their capabilities. I'm even friends with a gentleman that he runs his own podcast where he brings in people, including a wrestler from the WWE that they have autism, and so that they are capable of doing a lot of things. They will go to school. They will get an education. They're not restricted from that because of that, but it is a disability, and I do think that we should be looking into a lot of these dyes and foods chemicals, vaccines, and stuff like that, and figure out, you know, is there a link? Is there a correlation with causation? But, you know, having said that, you get the good and the bad, especially when you talk about stuff like COVID. And, you know, I think RFK, he means well. He has a good intent. I think he misspoke. It's not a big deal to me, but I know it was to other people. And I think going forward, I think he'll do the right thing and not misspeak on autism again like that. That did kind of hurt him, I think, a little bit with his support and people that were listening to him. But I think we need to remember that people do make mistakes. And I would much rather somebody make a misquote mistake or verbal mistake versus the type of mistakes we dealt with during the Biden administration, where the mistakes that we were seeing were laws signed in and borders being opened and stuff that was having a physical and realistic substantial impact that we could physically see the repercussions of on us here in America.
Yeah, and I guess one of the good parts about RFK and his work is he just removed the COVID vaccine from a list of shots for pregnant women and children. And in my opinion, it has always been something religious with me. And the COVID-19 vaccine, I've never been a huge supporter of it because it was only in testing for about 6 weeks and went straight to the public. I don't trust it. Most vaccines take years to process. And the COVID-19 vaccine only was tested for about 6 weeks. And it has been nothing but unsafe work. I had a aunt who more than likely had the COVID vaccine and within about a year passed away.
I mean, yeah. And I agree when stuff's rushed out like that. You know, even I'm on life-sustaining medication that it costs upwards of $600,000 a month. And no, I don't make that kind of money. I don't pay for it. I have to go through programs that pharmaceutical companies have where people that don't make enough can get that medicine. Because even with insurance, you're still going to need help. You're going to need supplements. You're going to need access programs. That's what they're called. Patient access programs. But even some of the medicine I'm on, while it's life-sustaining, I mean, you're looking at years and years of testing and data. And, you know, I'm even friends with a Republican physician named Dr. Test, and he pioneered a lot of the disease management and treatments for pulmonary arterial hypertension, which is what I have. And there's a medicine that came out just, I got on it last August. So it was released in 2024, but it went through trial. And it had, when a medicine gets approved, it has to pass multiple phases before it's released into general population and go back and collect more data. And it's a very thorough process that is not and cannot ever be rushed, because you have to wait out time. You have to see how it impacts a person's health. And, you know, thank God with the medicine I'm on that I have to inject, or one of them, you know, everything's good. Everything's in the clear. It is new enough. You're going to see some side effects. You're going to see that with any medication. But the way, in my opinion, the COVID vaccine was done, even though, yeah, I've gotten it because at the time when I was getting it with the disease I have, I had like a 20% survival rate versus an 80% mortality rate. So I went ahead and got it, and I did. Every time I've had to get one, I get extremely, extremely sick. I don't like it. I think something's wrong with it. But it's also, you know, the fear of dying. I don't want to die, and it puts you in a weird way. And doctors, the team that helps me, went ahead and cleared it, so I got it. But I do think it's rushed, because I've seen the data and I've seen people having heart attacks, and I am concerned about my future. And it's kind of a catch 22 there, because I am going to have a heart and double lung transplant. So a lot of the stuff I've seen, I'm like, well, I'm headed that way anyway, and that's probably not the way I should look at it. But I didn't really have much left to lose, whether I took it or not, so I took it. But yeah, no, stuff like that should not be rushed out. And I didn't know, can you go back? Did that say pregnant women?
Mm-hmm. It did.
For healthy pregnant women. Yeah, I don't generally, and I'm not in medical school yet, but you know, I've shadowed doctors and I visit patients and other stuff for doctors because of a national support group that I run for my disease. And even in psychology, we talk about vaccines and herd immunity and all that, but pregnant women, usually, I haven't come across many of them ever being recommended any type of vaccine. I know there's certain vaccines children get. That's kind of mind blowing to me, because I didn't know that was actually being recommended. Again, since I got sick, I've been real focused on my disease and sickness, but that really makes me concerned for the up and coming generations. If they make it, what kind of health defects and repercussions they're going to be experiencing, if we've already seen grown adults having heart attacks and other problems because a lot of those vaccines were rushed out, and a lot of them are getting in trouble and were pulled, is what we also saw, but they were just giving them to people by the thousands.
Yeah, and it definitely affected majority of Americans. I mean, some people have other effects to the COVID vaccine, but for the most part, it somewhat worked, but in other cases, it did the exact opposite.
So I know some jobs were. Are there still places requiring you have to have the COVID-19 vaccine to work?
Not that I know of.
I know some hospitals may have been requiring it. I would have to look, and I am going to look, because now I'm curious if we still have hospitals that are requiring that. Because I remember a bunch of nurses during the pandemics and doctors, they were being laid off because they wouldn't take the vaccine. And there was also the mask issue that was going around, but that's just crazy to think about, that they were pushing rushed out vaccines onto pregnant women who, you know, you're taught about different illnesses to watch out for when you're pregnant. And there's a term for it that I'm just not remembering at the moment. Teratogens, I don't remember. But it's basically something that could harm the woman and harm the baby. And so that's real surprising and concerning to me, because there's a lot of stuff with Big Pharma that I support. I support patient access. But when it comes to stuff like that, you're doing the opposite of what you should be doing. And that's where I take issue, is when you're profiting at the expense of other human beings. I think it's wrong, and I'm glad RFK is doing what he's doing, because that needed to be stopped. That was a problem that's been out of control for a while, and I was also part of pushing for several bills where insurance companies, you know, they were double dipping in the copay, and pharmaceutical companies and insurance companies, mainly insurance, could tell doctors, hey, even though you suggest this medicine, we're gonna tell you we're only gonna take the other one. And so I think they had become way too powerful. And that's an issue that I am really glad to see that's getting taken on as someone that does have an interest in a valid stake in the healthcare, medical, and medicine field.
Yeah, I definitely agree. I also think this is a good time to take an end to this podcast.
Yeah. Again, we are
Writing Right with the Raiders.
And we're proud students here at Texas Tech University. We are members of the Tech College Republicans, who are the chapter of the Texas Federation of College Republicans, who is directly associated with the Republican GOP. And we're signing out from Lubbock, Texas.
See y'all next time.